Texas, America, and the world. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network, the day after Christmas. And once again, Iran seems to be the top story in the news. I'll tell you, folks, as you watch this whole thing unfold, it becomes pretty clear that unless something unanticipated happens, 1 year from today, I predict that we're going to be involved in a much wider war with absolutely catastrophic consequences. Jorge Hirsch has an interesting piece today at antiwar.com entitled The Meaning of the United Nations Security Council Vote on Iran. And according to Jorge, the final conditions for the impending military action are being rapidly put in place as we speak. December 19th, U.S. is sending aircraft carriers to the Persian Gulf to warn Iran, quote unquote. December 20th, Blair singles out Iran as the main obstacle to peace in the Middle East. December 23rd, United Nations Security Council sanctions resolution passes. How will it get started, according to Hirsch? Either a Gulf of Tonkin-like incident, or an attack by Israel, or an incident in Iraq that will be blamed on Iran. Anything to provoke an Iranian response, argue self-defense, quote-unquote, and escalate the confrontation until it leads to taking out our big guns, nuclear weapons. Another interesting story today. The Iraqi president is somewhat upset at the United States for arresting some Iranians in Iraq. Iraqi and Iranian authorities slammed the United States on Monday for having arrested several Iranians who were visiting Iraq. A U.S. official said the Iranians were suspected of involvement in attacks against Iraqi security forces. Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman Sayed Mohammad Ali Hosseini warned that this, quote, action is not justifiable by any international rules or regulations and will have unpleasant consequences, unquote. Iran's semi-official Mehr news agency reported. A spokesman for Iraqi President Jalal Talabani said that Talabani had invited the Iranians to the country, and the president was unhappy about the arrests. The U.S. National Security Council confirmed that the American military arrested at least four Iranians in raids during the past week in Iraq, including two diplomats. This is going to be an interesting story to watch in the days ahead. Coupled with another post at antiwar.com by our old friend John Basilutley of Americans Against World Empire. He's been a previous guest on this show. John tells us that there are 13 groups that favor chaos in Iraq. Who might be shooting at both sides, he asks us today. And certainly as we go through the posts that he lists at antiwar.com, we discover quite clearly that John Basilutley, as usual, is on target in listing 13 separate groups that have an interest in continuing the chaos. There is Al-Qaeda. There are Iraq's neighbors. There is the Likud party in Israel. There are the Kurds. There is the Shia and Kurdish militias that benefit from these activities. There are mercenaries. There are the Beltway bombers and companies set up in Washington to hire retired commandos, Army Rangers, and Navy SEALs who have gained hundreds of millions of dollars in contracts from the Pentagon to help out in Iraq. There are, number eight, other oil-producing nations. Number nine, weapons manufacturers in many lands selling millions and paying big commissions to all sides in the war. Number 10, gangster elements in Iraq. Number 11, all the nations that want to see the United States weakened and humiliated, including the Russians and the Chinese. Number 12, the Armageddon lobby and the Christian right in the United States with their dispensational eschatological profiteers. And finally, number 13, there are smaller tribal elements in Iraq itself with their own agendas, which are almost impossible for Washington to discern. Who might be shooting at both sides? That's John Basilutley today at antiwar.com. And it simply underscores the gravity of the situation that the United States finds itself in Iraq. When we return, Dr. Kaveh Farouk will join us, the Persian-Iranian scholar from the University of British Columbia up in Vancouver, Canada. He's going to discuss something called Pan-Tehranianism and how it's going to be used by neoconservatives, Israel, and Western oil companies to facilitate a war with Iran. This is Mark Dankos, America. Stay tuned.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits, no increase to your monthly mortgage payments, no refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
There is one and only one national populist news weekly, staffed by an unsurpassed team of veteran investigative journalists who have dared to rip the veil of deception from the cover-up stories promoted by the big money-controlled media monopoly.
American Free Press.
AFP's no-holds-barred journalists fearlessly seek the truth, no matter how controversial the issue. AFP publishes exciting, in-depth, uncensored news and information good patriotic Americans need to know to combat the coming police state being clamped in our republic. The American Free Press is your voice. Subscribe today and catch up on the real news. Mention RBN when you call and receive a one-year subscription, plus a copy of Michael Collins Piper's latest bestseller, The High Priest of War. All that for just $49? Call AFP toll-free, 888-699-NEWS, or visit AmericanFreePress.net.
We at Republic Broadcasting Network recognize that not everyone is able to make a monetary donation to help us expand our network and spread the word. So we've come up with another way that everyone can help support RBN and the fight for freedom. It is estimated that most people have over $2,000 worth of stuff lying around their home or workplace collecting dust. Things like DVDs, CDs, watches, comic books, toys, and collectibles. For the cost of postage, these items can be put to good use. Simply donate them to RBN. How does it work? Send your items to RBN Auctions, 7898 Enon Road, Pavo, Georgia, 31778. You simply pay for the cost of postage to ship your items to us. We sell them on eBay and keep the proceeds. For more information on how and what to donate, go to ebay.rbnlive.com. Free your home and office of unwanted clutter. Send your items to RBN Auctions, 7898 Enon Road, Pavo, Georgia, 31778.
Live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our special guest today is Dr. Kaveh Farouk, who is a Persian-Iranian scholar at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver, Canada. He's going to discuss today something called the ideology of pan-Tehranianism and how neoconservatives, Western oil companies, and Israel are using this ideology to threaten the territorial integrity of Iran as a prelude to a possible war. Dr. Farouk has an online book manuscript on the subject of pan-Tehranianism that can be found through the auspices of Rosanna Magazine Online, which is an entity dedicated to Persian and Iranian culture, history, and politics. Dr. Farouk, how are you, sir?
Oh, it's great to be on your show. I'm really honored. Thanks for having me on.
Well, you know, you are one of the inside sources, and I say inside because I'm a Westerner, I'm an American, I do not speak Persian. And so I try to rely on certain inside sources to help me interpret what is going on in that part of the world. And you're certainly one of them, sir. And as I think about pan-Tehranianism, our listeners, I think, need to know what this is, what its history is, and how some of these constituencies are using this ideology to attempt to break up the territorial integrity of Iran for purposes that have nothing to do with the well-being of the Iranian people. Go ahead, sir.
Oh, sure. Actually, what's fascinating about Pan-Turanianism is that it's really an outgrowth of a lot of the isms that started evolving in the 18th or probably 19th century, a lot of the racialist movements that kind of ran out of steam. I mean, you still have sort of the fringe elements like neo-Nazis and so on, but the original basis of Pan-Turanianism really comes from those Ottoman Turkish officers who were serving in the Ottoman army and who were actually sent into Germany. I guess it would have been Imperial Germany at the time, before the First World War. Although, the real exposure, the real idea of a pan-Turkic empire sort of spanning all the way from Japan to the middle of Europe was not even proposed by, any of the Turks themselves. This was first proposed, and this may shock a number of your listeners, by Westerner, a Hungarian national who was in the employ of British intelligence. His name was Arminius Vanbury, and he was basically a scholar of many languages, Turkish, Persian, Arabic, quite the linguist, and he was a professor, actually. And what happened was that he was kind of seconded to serve in the Ottoman court. Now, this would have been around 1857 to 1863. You did make reference to my online book. The photographs of Vanbury are there. One, he is sort of attired in Eastern dress. He's got a turban and so on. And on the left side, and on the right side, you see him in his typical European clothes. What's interesting is that, and this is a direct quote in a Russian book by Paksoy. It's called The Modern Encyclopedia of Religions in Russia and the Soviet Union. This has been translated into English by the Academic International Press. But here's a direct quote, and this is basically Vanbury making this statement to the Turks, and then he writes this to his boss, Lord Palmerston, of the British Foreign Office, and I quote directly, "They," meaning the Turks, "could form a political entity stretching from the Altai Mountains in eastern Asia to the Bosphorus." Basically, the main reason this was of interest at the time for the British Empire was they were interested in starting an anti-Slavic sort of racialist movement against the Russians. Why? The main reason was that there was a big game sort of happening in between the Russians and the British in Persia. And the reason for that was the Russians were trying to reach India and the Persian Gulf, and meanwhile the British were sort of sitting pretty much in what is now India, Pakistan, and so on. That was India. And they basically wanted to protect their possessions, so there was sort of a contest going on. Persia was caught in the middle. One of the consequences of this sort of conflict was the carving up a piece of sort of northeast Persia and attaching it to sort of other territories of India, creating Afghanistan pretty much. And also a number of wars were fought between Russia and Persia, resulting in Persia losing pretty much almost all of its territories to what was Tsarist Russia. Britain was kind of sympathetic to Persia being weakened, not totally destroyed, but dismembered to some extent and so on, because Persian culture was so powerful in India at the time. It was the only vernacular that could unite all of the Indians possibly against the British. So the British were quite concerned about that. Now, Pan-Turanianism at first was basically an anti-Russian geopolitical weapon, but it quickly morphed into something else, especially with the Young Turk movement that happened around the early 1900s. And feel free to interrupt me if I'm talking too much or babbling.
This is wonderful. I'm following every bit of this. Go ahead, sir.
This is something that's probably going to affect the Western world, and it already has, but just not being reported. But what happened was the Young Turks basically, that on the surface there was a quote, human rights movement, end quote. What it really was, people forget that the Ottoman Empire was very cosmopolitan, even up to the 1900s. True, there have been horrible conflicts between Armenians and Turks, massacres that happened and so on, but still there was still sort of a cosmopolitan character. You'll still see that somewhat in Istanbul today. But what the Young Turks were really discussing was sort of a pan-Turk super race, the ascendancy of the Turks over the others. What's interesting is when you look at this ideology, and in the 1860s, I guess, Vanbury had first made his proposition. Ottoman Turkish officers had then gone to the Austro-Hungarian Empire and mostly Imperial Germany, and this was right at a time when the German kind of Übermensch philosophy was starting to, you know, it was in its embryonic stage. And a lot of the Turkish officers became kind of infected with this mindset. And when they returned, and the Young Turk movement, I'm not really going to expand too much on that. That's quite fascinating as well. But what's fascinating is a number of sort of ideologies began to form. And none of these really had any scientific basis or historical basis, but a number of very powerful beliefs began to form. And from its very inception, not only were these ideas anti-Western to a certain extent, but anti-Persian at the same time, for the simple reason that, for the Lebensraum, so that's a German term for living space, everything from Vienna, basically, to, again, the borders of Mongolia and Japan. The Japanese are also considered as Turks, by the way, in this ideology. And basically everything had to be carved up. What's fascinating is, again, you see the names of Westerners who are wrapped up in the Young Turk movement, which is quite fascinating. Let me introduce you to Vladimir Jakovsky. Now, he became the editor of the Young Turk newspaper. Now, the owner of the paper was, of course, Turkish. But Jakovsky, he had been educated in Italy. Now, there's a lot of hype and speculation, but we're still not clear with which foreign intelligence organizations he was a part of. We don't even really know his nationality. It sounds Slavic, but he could have just been an Eastern European Jew in British service. Purely speculative. We know a little bit more about a Dutchman by the name of Jacob Kahn, K-A-N-N. And he became, again, he worked with Jakovsky on the editorial content of the Young Turk newspaper. Why is this significant? Because of a lot of the ideologies we'll be discussing today, it's as if they were sort of, for lack of a better term, manipulated or invented by a number of non-Turks for the benefit of Turkic pan-racialists. We also have an Alexander Helfland Pavras, who we know passed away in 1924. He was apparently a double agent, Russian and British, and I've managed to find a photo of him, so we posted that on the online book. Now, Pavras, from what we know, he was involved in some arms smuggling for the Turkish army during the Balkan Wars. This is right before the First World War, which is 1914-1918. And, of course, there are references if the listeners are interested. Now, again, far more interesting is a certain John Buchan. And he even wrote a novel of his escapades with the Turks. Now, that could have been just a front name for a certain Aubrey Herbert. And he was, again, a key intelligence official. He was actually in the Battle of Gallipoli as well, and apparently he spoke Turkish quite fluently. But I think even his role was so apparent that even T.E. Lawrence, Arabia fame, even noted of his complicity, Herbert's complicity in helping the Young Turk movement in Istanbul.
Dr. Farouk, we will be back, and I want to continue pursuing this and draw it right into the present time as well. This is Mark Dankos America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Back with Dr. Kaveh Farouk of the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. When we return, stay tuned.
Since 1988, Herbal Healer Academy has been the global supplier of the finest natural medicines. We specialize in keeping you alive and healthy. We provide outstanding products like ECX, colloidal silver, olive leaf extract, oregano oil, and hundreds of herbals, oils, books, and educational materials. We have homeopathic detox solutions for chemtrails, radiation, MSG, and aspartame poisoning. We also train naturopathic healers via correspondence education. Why wait any longer? Go ahead and do it today. Sign up on the web and receive our new 120-page catalog and a current Herbal Healer newsletter free. Simply log on to herbalhealer.com and check out the online member testimonials and our hundreds of exceptional products. That's herbalhealer.com, your website for safe, effective, natural alternatives and education. That's herbalhealer.com.
In the United States, it is now estimated that over 90% of family income is now being used to pay back consumer debt. Because of financial problems, mostly from credit card debt, approximately 1 in 4 families struggle to pay bills on even basic necessities such as mortgage, food, and utilities. And with millions of people desperately searching for a fresh start, North American Educational Services is here to help you regain your financial independence. We are very proud that the Debt Relief Educational Services Program has helped over 8,100 families nationwide since 1998, eliminating over $215 million of credit card debt, and still counting, and enabled clients to stop monthly payments immediately. The NAES program is unique, designed to help you, the consumer, not your creditors. To take back your financial freedom, call 1-888-245-7097. That's 1-888-245-7097. Or visit www.integritydebtoptions.com.
Would you enjoy a career where you pick your hours, work for who you want to, when you want to, as much as you want to? No one knows about this hidden career because there is no book, school, or teaching material available until now. Learn the trade of window painting. Window Genie is now offering a 3-day workshop on DVD that shows you how to reproduce art, text, and graphics professionally, even if you can't draw a stick man. Secrets, cheater techniques, shortcuts, tips, and tricks are all revealed. Recoup your investment in as little as one job and have a career for life. This training also gives you the skills to do regular sign work, indoor murals, and signage. Begin your new career today. Just call us at 780-457-7109 or visit us at windowgenie.com. Again, that's windowgenie, spelled J-E-A-N-N-I-E.com.
Mark Dan Costs America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our special guest today is Dr. Kaveh Farouk, who is a Persian-Iranian scholar at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. He is discussing the ideology and history of Pan-Turanianism and how at the present time, and we're not yet quite at the present time in terms of our conversation, but we have to lay the history of this and the major players before you before we can get into the present way in which this is being used by neoconservatives, Western oil companies, and Israel to threaten the territorial integrity of Iran. And I would really urge you to look for Dr. Kaveh Farouk's online book manuscript on Pan-Turanianism through the auspices of Rosanna, R-O-Z-A-N-E-H, Rosanna Magazine, which is an entity online dedicated to Persian-Iranian culture, history, and politics. Dr. Farouk, kind of picking up where we left off here, we're talking about Pan-Turanianism as basically a pan-Turkish movement from, say, the middle part of the 19th century onward, and that it was kind of the, if I'm understanding this correctly, kind of the ideological glue that was helping to hold the Ottoman Empire together.
Pretty much, I think that began to become more of a tool, indeed, because up to that time, people don't realize that the Ottoman Empire was very much an Islamic caliphate. And so it wasn't really based on necessarily race or one race or language, although the Turks were the rulers, so that would have been the language of the rulers. But Arabic was the language of religion, and Persian was the language of literature. In fact, Persian newspapers continued to be printed up to the 1880s. My wife and I were shocked when we visited Istanbul to see so many tombstones with Iranian or Persian-sounding names. Persian poetry was everywhere. Of course, the Turks can't read that because the script, because Kemal Atatürk, the founder of the modern Turkish Republic, known as Atatürk, the father of the Turks, he changed the script when he came to power after the First World War. And this is actually where our discussion is going, Mustafa Kemal Atatürk. He was one of the officers in the Turkish army. From what I know, he also served in the Ottoman embassy in London. And what's fascinating is a lot of the beliefs that had started with the Pan-Turk movement by the early 1900s began to become pretty much solidified under a state apparatus under Atatürk. Now, basically, to this will sound surprising to a number of your readers, when especially, and of course, your listeners and so on, when we talk about the beliefs of Pan-Turanianism, because they are, for lack of a better term, bizarre. But I'll just give you sort of an overview. Basically, again, like any pan-racist movement, be it Persian chauvinism, be it pan-Arabism, Nazism, whatever, basically all of these require a sort of historical narcissism. So basically, in the case of pan-Turanianism, basically we have a whole new version of world history that's been printed in volumes and volumes of books. Now, all I can say is there are new frontiers being set in the disciplines of linguistics, archaeology, anthropology, even logic. It almost reminds me of the nonsense oxymoronic term Aryan physics of Nazi Germany. But anyways, some of the beliefs of Pan-Turanianism are fascinating. The first one is that the inventors of human culture, language, and civilization were the Turks. Now, it's important to remember that the majority of the people in Turkey do not really believe in this any more than the majority of Iranians believe in Persian chauvinism, or any more than all Germans believe in Nazism. This is a fringe movement. It's important to keep emphasizing this. So if I use the word Turks and I emphasize this, this is not against Turks in any way. And let me emphasize, my own grandparents spoke Turkish as well. Iran is very much a multilingual, multi-ethnic state. It always has been throughout its entire history. But anyways, Kemal Atatürk, he lived between 1881 and 1938. He stated something interesting when he came to power. And I'm just quoting from Poulton and Robbins, and this is Atatürk stating, quote, "Writing history is as important as making history," end quote. Now, the reinterpretation of past history had already begun, but the first such congress was called the First History Congress, which was held in Ankara in 1932. Now, what's interesting is that the people who were attending this conference had very little academic training as historians, anthropologists, archaeologists, or linguists. The Turkish History Research Society basically was, in fact, a branch of the Republican Turkish People's Party. So basically you had politicians who were now setting the basis for history.
Dr. Farouk, we will be back. Hold that thought, and let's keep digging in this whole question of pan-Turanianism when we come back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned for Dr. Kaveh Farouk of the University of British Columbia in Vancouver when we return.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network.
because you can handle the truth.
There is one and only one national populist news weekly, staffed by an unsurpassed team of veteran investigative journalists who have dared to rip the veil of deception from the cover-up stories promoted by the big money-controlled media monopoly.
American Free Press.
AFP's no-holds-barred journalists fearlessly seek the truth, no matter how controversial the issue. AFP publishes exciting, in-depth, uncensored news and information good patriotic Americans need to know to combat the coming police state being clamped in our republic. The American Free Press is your voice. Subscribe today and catch up on the real news. Mention RBN when you call and receive a one-year subscription, plus a copy of Michael Collins Piper's latest bestseller, The High Priests of War. All that for just $49. Call AFP toll-free, 888-699-NEWS, or visit AmericanFreePress.net.
Gold, ever climbing, as the dollar continues to spiral into a free fall. How long before it hits rock bottom? Between 1800 and 1913, the value of the dollar was more or less constant. Since the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913, the value of the dollar has depreciated 97%. Due to global inflationary policies and the continued erosion of the U.S. dollar, gold and silver are still in the early stages of the greatest bull market the world has ever seen. Whether you purchase precious metals to stabilize your portfolio or you're looking for strong growth, gold and silver will provide you with both. Don't you owe it to yourself to do business with Republic Trading Group? Call us today and become a part of the raging bull in gold and silver. 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898. Call now. 1-800-691-7898.
Hi, this is Steve Shank with Fearless Radio and RBN, your only source for solutions to problems of troubled times. Do you realize that 3 years ago, the JMS Food Group warned people that there would come a time when if you didn't grow it yourself, or you already had it stored, you wouldn't dare eat it? Wait a minute. E. coli on our spinach and lettuce? That's our food you're talking about. You know where E. coli comes from? Feces, black water. In short, poop. We have to decide quickly to get all the food we're going to need. It's obvious that contamination can leave us hungry even before food shortages shut us down. For help ordering your food supply and protection from dishonest suppliers, call 800-409-5633. On the web, efoodsdirect.com. On the phone, 800-409-5633.
Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our special guest today is Dr. Kaveh Farouk, Persian-Iranian scholar from the University of British Columbia in Vancouver, Canada, talking about pan-Tehranianism. And Dr. Farouk, trying to get back to the conversation here in the midst of our commercial interruptions, let's see if I can follow thus far where we are on this. Pan-Tehranianism was a fringe movement that had its roots apparently in the middle of the 19th century, during the time of the Ottoman Empire. It had a strongly nationalistic, particularly narcissistic view of Turkish nationalism. It was both anti-Slavic as well as anti-Persian. There were five or six major figures that we've discussed in the first part of this show that were heavily involved in it. And it was a movement that was at various times manipulated and sometimes even co-opted by either British or Russian agents of influence. And that then brings us up to, if I'm understanding this correctly, Kemal Atatürk, the so-called father of the modern state of Turkey. in a conference in 1932 that we were talking about before the break. Is that where we are?
Exactly, exactly.
Okay.
And basically, I myself admire Ataturk because he really brought Turkey into the 20th century, the modern age. Turkey has become a very modern democratic state. I guess it's like any type of government republic. I think that's the one possible, for lack of a better term, weakness that might threaten the Turkish state. And the Turks are aware. But it's one thing to, you know, we all have an ideology, mythology, but I think there's an awareness that these guys could grow out of control. But there are things happening right now, as we will see later in the show, that are bothering the Turks as well, especially about how the Pan-Turk movement is being used, which in the end could even threaten Turkey as a state. But I won't digress too much to, at this one. I'll stick to where we left off. Just very shortly, the premise of the Turkish history thesis in Sun Language Theory, the outcome of the 1932 Congress in Turkey, is based on three basic principles. First, nation building of Turkey along European parameters. So Turkey was to become a West European state. And in that, I'd say, I wouldn't say it's been a total success, but Turkey is definitely probably one of the most secular states, the most secular state, in my humble opinion, in the Islamic world. For those of you ever interested in visiting Turkey, you will be amazed at how modern, especially Western Turkey, is. The second principle, which has been far more difficult, was to totally reject Islam as the basis of ethnic and national identity. Recall that we had mentioned that the Ottoman Empire was basically a caliphate, and that was rejected in favor of becoming a European state. And third, and this is the most controversial of all, is that the Turks were to be presented as the heirs of nearly all civilizations. I think that part is a bit problematic. Now, basically, it's to prove conclusively, and I use the word prove with some license here, that virtually all great civilizations in the past, such as ancient Sumeria, the Hittites, Egypt, Persia, etc., are all either Turkish in origin or have been founded by the Turks. There is a map that I've actually posted by the Pan-Turan Society, which shows arrows pointing towards Asia, Europe, the Middle East, North America, India, Polynesia, and so on, meaning that all of these civilizations were founded by the Turanians or the ancient Turks. And basically, North American Indians are also viewed as Turks. So there's definitely a Turkish connection, according to this ideology, to North America. Now, what's fascinating is that there's a standard textbook for basically Turco-centric historical revisionism. There was a professor in Turkey called Salahi Diker. He's written an 864-page book. Basically, it's entitled "And the Whole World Was One Language, 10,000 Years of the Turks." Now, Professor Diker is not a historian or an archaeologist. I believe his PhD is in geophysical engineering. But nevertheless, he's jumped straight in. And basically, I've tried emailing the professor and contacting him. One of my students actually did get through to him and by email, and his response was this: all past non-Turkish research pertaining to Turkish history has been prejudicial, biased, and anti-Turkish. So that with that line, basically, you just wipe the slate clean. Now, one quote from his website, Professor Diker, is very revealing, and I'm just going to read it out. "Indeed, I have proven that the entire culture of 6,300 BC Anatolia, as discovered by Çatal Hoyuk, an archaeologist who worked with James Mellart, everything is Turkish since 8,300 years old. Culture was not created in a day. Everything was founded 10,000 years ago by the Turks." Now, I can go on and on, but basically Soviet scholarship, Russian scholarship, Western scholarship, French, German, Anglo-Saxon, You can look at a plethora of references. None of this, of course, is supported. And first of all, Anatolia is a Greek term. It means the east, the land of the east. It is not even a Turkish term. But then there's a whole bunch of bizarre ideologies that there's a certain gray wolf that led the ancestors of Genghis Khan and then howled and basically told them to conquer Persia, Anatolia, the Caucasus, the Middle East, Russia, Ukraine, Europe, the Balkans, and so on. None of this is historically acknowledged or supported, of course. I'm just going to just quickly go over some of the beliefs. Ancient Sumeria, for example, is seen as Turkish. A fabricated dictionary has been posted online. I don't, of course, understand or read Sumerian, so I've contacted a number of professors at Harvard, Cambridge, and so on, and they looked at this and they said this is a total fabrication. Basically, it's a bogus dictionary that have invented terms of, allegedly Sumerian origin that resemble modern-day Turkish words. Again, this is totally false. And we know the Sumerians have invented the wheel, for example, many writing and so on. But this will sound bizarre for the Western listeners. The culture of, and I'm reading this out, the culture of ancient Greece in Anatolia is Turkish. So basically, ancient Greece was founded by the Turks. This is very strange because there were the Greeks were in the area thousands of years before the first Turk ever entered the region, but not according to this ideology. So basically, anything to do with Greek art, literature, scientific inquiry, all the gifts of civilization that the Greeks have given us are not actually Greek. So the Greek Parthenon, for example, again, is according to this ideology, not Greek. And this is the logic that comes up in Professor Diker's book. Turkish-speaking peoples of an advanced culture already lived in Asia Minor 10,000 years ago, and the Mediterranean culture was not created by the Greeks and the Romans, but by the ancient Turks. And, of course, the Etruscans, the pre-Roman Italy, are seen as Turks. Even the Armenians are seen as Turks. This is very interesting because over a million Armenians were killed by the Turks. But according to this new findings, and I use the word again with license, Armenians are Turks. And I can go on and on. Ancient North American Indians... So the modern-day North American Indians are seen as, ancient Turks. And, of course, everything from, let's say, Tajikistan, which is Persian-speaking in Central Asia, that's, of course, been proven as Turkish. All of Persian literature has been, according to this ideology, created by the ancestors of Genghis Khan. Judeo-Christianity and Islam are claimed to have Turkish origins. I think they've based this on the Hungarian-born British novelist Arthur Koestler's The 13th Tribe of Israel. So
yes.
This is bizarre. The holy prophet Noah was a Turk. And, of course, there's something even more bizarre. Professor Gonzali Renda, she teaches in Turkey, recently had an exhibition in London, and on the 12th of April, 2005, she actually claimed that the Ottoman sultans were the descendants of Adam. I leave that to the listener to interpret. Even the Prophet Muhammad of Islam is claimed to have been a Turk by the name of, not Muhammad, but Mehmed Oglu, which is kind of Turkified. And, of course, the ancient northern Iranians who lived in Europe, they spoke an ancient dialect related to the Farsi Persian of today. All of those are claimed as Turkish, of course. Again, this goes totally against reputable scholarship. The Parthian ancient language of the Parthian language of Persia, which is the basis of Persian and Kurdish and so on, was of course Turkish. Kurds are seen as Turks. Bosnians, Macedonians, Albanians, Ukrainians, all are seen as Turks. I can go on and on, but I think you get the general idea, and why this is so dangerous. Because This type of ideology has been injected into northwestern Iran. And in northwestern Iran, Turkish is the main vernacular. It's Azerbaijani Turkish. And basically, because of the politics of Iran right now, there's a lot of disaffection with the regime. People may basically do not identify with its pan-Islamic ideology. And what's happened, and also what the regime has done over the past basically 2.5 decades is they've pretty much removed the teaching of Iranian history from the curriculum. It's been very much minimized. So there is a sort of a lack of knowledge of Iran's history and so on, and this is being eagerly exploited by people who have an agenda. Interestingly, the Iranian regime has taken very little action to stop what's happening. But we have to go back, change gears a bit. Probably very few of the listeners have heard of a project called the Bernard Lewis Project. What is the Bernard Lewis Project? Right after the Iranian Revolution in 1979, where you had basically fanatic, for lack of a better term, Islamo-fascist come to power, there was a very obscure meeting by in a place, and I think I've written this down, yes. It was the Bilderberg meeting in Baden, Austria. This took place between April the 27th and the 29th in 1979. Information is very difficult to come by because I think a lot of the proceedings are held in camera. You can't really, like, obtain archives. But thanks to people like Robert Dreyfus and David Engdahl, a lot of information is now coming to the surface. And I've also had information from former Iranian diplomats in the Shah's time. So we've pieced together, and something very interesting has come up. Professor Bernard Lewis, I think he now teaches in Princeton. He's in his 80s. I must admit, he is probably one of the most informed historians of the world of Islam I have ever seen. He dwarfs anyone in comparison. Unfortunately, he does not use his knowledge just for the propagation of understanding and peace, but as we will see, quite nefariously. But what happened in the conference was he unveiled a map of Iran and the region, and the map shows basically all of these regions being fragmented and balkanized into little countries, Iran in particular. And so basically the project is to carve up Khuzestan, that's southwestern Iran, and just basically make it a exclusively Arabic province. There are Arabs in Khuzestan, so and they call that the Ahwaz Project, named after the provincial capital. So that's
and,
the separate.
And Khuzestan province is where the center of Iran's oil production is located?
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. And how convenient, because at one stroke you deny Iran of its oil income. And, of course, you add another little sheikdom to the puny Persian Gulf states. When you look at their populations, they're ridiculous. They're not even the size of, just New York City? Evansville, Indiana, probably. But again, these are easy to control, and of course, you don't have to deal with a powerful state. And then you have the Baluchis in southwest Iran next to Pakistan. You've got the Kurds, but the Kurds have had separatist sentiments for a long time. So we can't really pin everything on foreign intelligence, although there has been a lot of Russian manipulation of Iranian Kurds. The Kurds, because of their cultural and racial proximity to the Persian sphere, especially in Turkey and Arab countries, have always had breakaway sentiments. But again, these have easily been co-opted. And Azerbaijanis, whom we are talking about today, of course, they are being targeted as well. I think it's important to note that in my sort of just perspective, I think what's happened is there's a frustration of dealing with the Iranian regime, which is, again, I think we know what's been happening, and there's support of terrorist organizations and so on. What's fascinating is that rather than target the regime in Tehran, I think a lot of the geopolitical lobbies are making the mistake of targeting the people of Iran. And I think this is counterproductive because it will force the people, even though they may not wish it, to rally around the regime, which they don't like, which is exactly what happened in 1980 when Saddam Hussein invaded Iran. Especially many of the people around the perimeters of the country had no loyalty to the regime, but they were willing to resist an invader.
When we come back, Dr. Farouk, I want to pursue this a little bit further, both where Bernard Lewis is concerned, as well as the counterproductive character of supporting some of these separatist ideologies and advocating military preemptive strikes, which may in fact play into the hands of the regime in Tehran. We will be back with Dr. Kaveh Farouk, Persian scholar of the University of British Columbia, when Mark Dankoff's America returns on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.
Do you ever wonder how an opera singer that hits a high note is able to shatter a wine glass? Well, the glass has a natural resonant frequency. If the resonant frequency making the glass vibrate is powerful enough, the size of the vibration will become so large the glass shatters. Using this same principle, Royal Raymond Rife discovered that disease-causing organisms can be destroyed using different resonant frequencies. The BioSolutions frequency instrument uses the same technology for relief or elimination of pain and disease conditions with no side effects. The 2006 BioSolutions Plus is the easiest to operate frequency instrument ever developed. Its easy reference guide will allow you to begin using the instrument within minutes. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. Don't just treat symptoms, eliminate the cause. For more information, call BioSolutions toll-free, 1-866-885-6625. That's 1-866-885-6625. Once again, 1-866-885-6625.
Do you suffer from frequent and severe headaches? Well, you don't have to any longer. Headache Stay Gone is an all-natural headache remedy that is free of all side effects. Headache Stay Gone will cure any headache and prevent it from returning again. Painkillers can offer temporary relief at best, along with a long list of harmful side effects. Headache Stay Gone uses all-natural ingredients and cures your headache, letting you enjoy more time with your family and loved ones. We'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone today and send you the bill. Wait until your headache is cured before you pay for it. That's right, Headache Stay Gone must work for you before you pay for it. Try Headache Stay Gone risk-free by calling 1-800-327-0727 or visit www.headachestaygone.com. Again, that's 1-800-327-0727. And don't forget to ask about your risk-free trial today. Call now. Start living life without the headaches.
Your life demands long-lasting power for everything. If you want to find the best battery selection at the best prices, then BatteryStation.com is the place for you. Find common or hard-to-find batteries for practically everything, from computer backup units and camcorders to cell phones and wheelchairs. Go to BatteryStation.com for all your battery supply needs. At BatteryStation.com, you'll also discover high-tech LED tactical flashlights for every task, from trusted names like Surefire, Tektite, Gerber, Pelican, and more. BatteryStation.com offers lights featuring super bright, super tough, long life LED technology. At BatteryStation.com, you'll find tough, crush proof, waterproof, airtight, hard cases of all sizes from Pelican, Otter, and S3 Extreme. Visit them today, BatteryStation.com. It's all one word, BatteryStation.com. Or call 417-257-7799. That's 417-257-7799. Your source for batteries and accessories at very low prices. BatteryStation.com.
Across America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our special guest today is Dr. Kaveh Farouk of the University of British Columbia in Vancouver, Canada. We've been discussing pan-Turanianism, this very odd pan-Turkish, narcissistic, nationalistic ideology from the middle of the 19th century onward that began to coalesce into some things that affected both British and Russian foreign policy in the region at the time. And I suspect that we're going to be getting into shortly some conversations about what might be going on over there now, just for example, in northwestern Azerbaijani Iran, and the way in which this pan-Turanian ideology might be used in the hands of some foreign intelligence agencies to create difficulties for the IRI regime in Iran. But before we get into that, I wanted to alert Dr. Farouk, as well as our listeners, that this tends to be, in the next 10 minutes, a time of frequent commercial breaks. I just wanted to mention that if you would like to support the Republic Broadcasting Network, that you can do so by calling in with your gifts at 1-800-724-2719. That's 1-800-724-2719. You can also contact us on the web at rbnlive.com. That's rbnlive.com. If you're interested in new Republic Broadcasting Network T-shirts, you can get those as well at 1-800-724-2719 or at rbnlive.com or at notyranny.com. Aaron Russo's new DVD, America, Freedom to Fascism, is also available through the Republic Broadcasting Network at 1-800-724-2719 or at rbnlive.com. And Mr. Russo's new effort can be procured for $19.95 plus $4.95 shipping and handling. And if you have questions in regard to our show today with Dr. Farouk or a question for me, you can call us at our live call-in number, which is 1-800-313-9443. Dr. Farouk, we're reaching a point again in the next 10 minutes or so where there are going to be some frequent interruptions for commercial breaks, and then we'll have an opportunity to get back to a longer period of time for conversation. But it sounds to me like just in northwestern Azerbaijani Iran, where you have, again, a strong component of Turkish-speaking peoples there.
Yes.
That in that part of Iran, which I have been in, albeit 32 years ago, that in that part of Iran, is this pan-Turkish ideology, this pan-Turanianism, which you have done an absolutely outstanding job of acquainting the rest of us with, is this ideology being utilized by outside foreign powers and outside foreign intelligence agencies to attempt to sever Azerbaijan, Iran, from the rest of the country there?
Absolutely. And what's interesting is that, and I think I emphasized early in the show, I myself, I'm half descended from, I'm half Azerbaijani and half Northern Iran.
Here comes that commercial break I was warning you about. Hold on to that thought, sir, because I really want to pursue this when we come back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Back with Dr. Kaveh Farouk of the University of British Columbia in Vancouver, Canada. When we return, stay tuned.
Rights protects every American's God-given right to keep and bear arms. Now that right is being seriously undermined as legally registered rifles are being confiscated in some parts of our country. If we're not careful, we may find ourselves with no right to own guns. And that's where Gun Owners of America comes in. Gun Owners of America is in Washington every day fighting for you to keep that right. Congressman Ron Paul has called GOA the only no-compromise gun lobby in Washington. You need to be part of this great grassroots group of activists who are keeping the heat on their members of Congress. Find out right now how you can join. Call 888-886-GUNS and get started receiving their fact-filled newsletters and action alerts. Call 888-886-GUNS or go to their webpage at gunowners.org and help make your voice heard in Washington. Make that call right now and call Gun Owners of America at 888-886-GUNS. Remember, it's not just about gun control, it's about control.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.